This is Joe Bondosky with Start Writing. We have an interview today with the founder of Something or Other Publishing, often just referred to as Soups. He's also the author of the People of the Sign trilogy. Books 1 and 2 are currently available on Amazon. And both of those were hot new releases when they were released there, as he was using the Soups model to really drum up a lot of interest for his books as he released them. And so he's here to talk about both his publishing and his writing. So first of all, let's talk about this. If people haven't listened to Carrie's interview and they hit this one up first, why don't you talk to us a little about what Soup or Something or Other Publishing is and how your model works?
Sure. So Something or Other Publishing is designed to take advantage of the disruption within the publishing industry, as well as the various forces that are driving new forms of publishing, including ebooks, including social media. So Something or Other Publishing looks at the end-to-end process of publishing books and looks at the people that write the books, read the books, and work on the books as a community of participants. So it's really a platform online, leveraging aspects of social media, that crowdsources the interest in a book and allows the author to build his author platform and learn about marketing himself and his product before the book is actually published. That is why we've been so successful at a string of number one rated hot new releases on Amazon.com. And it's both organic and very focused, in that cream rises to the top in our model. I think if you listened to the interview by Carrie, he probably references himself as the CEO of his own work. And so only the best and the brightest rise to the top of our model, because it's a very competitive thing to successfully publish a book in today's world. And what makes us unique is all the aspects that you need to focus on are presented to you in a structured way, in an educational program with homework assignments that educate the author about all aspects of what it takes to be a successful author and publish a successful book. Does that mean all of our authors are best sellers? No, but it does mean that the odds are much, much higher that your book will not sink to the rock, like a rock to the bottom of the ocean, but it will have its day in the sun, it will get great reviews, and if it's a worthwhile book, you'll have a shot, a legitimate shot at breaking through.
Yeah, I do want to bring up Carrie's work now, and he mentioned that you said homework assignments, but he said essentially these assignments are teaching authors how to build their platforms and leverage those into selling their book. And he said, you know, it was just a fantastic thing. He was already fairly familiar, but if you're not, it was really a great way to go, because there was a lot of coaching and hand-holding in developing an audience for your book. And for those who didn't listen to the interview with Carrie, Carrie's book is a hot new release, and it is still in pre-order. It's not even out yet, and it's a number one hot new release. And that's not a Kindle edition. That is the paperback only that is doing that well on Amazon. So that is very impressive, and I think it says a lot about the model that that Wade is developing.
We were very excited when we saw that his book, so we put it in several categories, one of which was wealth management. And when we saw that he actually beat out Tony Robbins with Tony Robbins' new release, it was only for one day, but, you know, hey, he did it, and that was very exciting. And so he was, like, number 3 in wealth management that day, and Tony Robbins was number 4.
That's great. So wow, wealth management. I mean, he pitched the story to me. So, again, if you didn't hear the interview, his book is about the lottery curse. Essentially, most people who win the lottery lose all the money within, I think, 3 to 4 years. And so he did a ton of research on these people and how their lives just kind of fall apart. And so I do think it's kind of an interesting thing that you put that into wealth management as a category.
Well, we had a banker write a foreword to it, you know, because it's the idea of get rich slowly versus trying to get rich quick. And this banker was talking about how he looks for people who have a sound idea and the stick-to-itiveness, the perseverance and the drive and the diligence to be successful. Whereas you know, there's a mentality that wants a windfall, but this, the life skills that go along with managing that windfall don't fall from heaven. They have to be learned. And so yeah, the focus of the book is not wealth management, but since you can put it in several categories, we thought, well, why not try that one as well?
Yeah, well, I think it is a good idea. Particularly, it's a little more entertaining probably than most things you'll come across the subject. And there are definitely some wealth management lessons to be learned from the stories he's telling. So Kerry, I think, is a little bit of an outlier for the model you've designed, because he already had a strong audience. He had a background in marketing before he even started writing his first short stories. And so, you know, he's kind of a powerhouse coming in that term. So talk to me about the experience of a writer working on their first book who's not particularly established an audience yet. What can they expect in terms of coming to Soups?
So we organize the work around what we call the three P's of publishing: product, platform, and promotion or pitch. For the third P. So obviously you need a high quality product, and the average author thinks, you know, they're going to lock themselves in a room or get a, you know, little condo by the beach or wherever they think they're going to do their brilliant writing. And then they're going to, you know, work by themselves diligently doing the research, and voila, they'll produce the next great American novel. But they haven't thought about all the other aspects that go into turning that manuscript into a high quality product. And that's what those who go do self-publishing don't realize. You can't just throw a well-written manuscript out there and have it be successful. You really have to hone the product. And there's a whole host of people that need to get involved in that: editors, proofreaders, cover designers, book designers, to create just the product itself. So that's one of the areas that we educate the author on as they go through our milestones. Then there's the platform. In order for an author to be successful today, again, the fantasy of getting a big name publishing contract with a big publishing house that's going to march you down the yellow brick road, that's just a fantasy. You really have to build your own platform. And even if you're getting an agent and wanting to pitch your book to those big publishing houses, they're going to ask you, what's your platform that you've built by yourself? If even the big publishing houses don't want authors who don't have a clue about building their platform. So there's a set of activities and assignments around building that platform. And then, again, in our model, if you can't sell your book, why would you think we can in today's world of social media? So you need to be able to actually sell your book. You need to be able to create a warm market through your platform. And there's a set of activities around that. And how do you craft a Twitter message? How do you craft a Facebook message? We offer all kinds of services so that you don't have to do the mind-numbing work per se of doing all that. You know, we can help you with some of that through various services that we provide as well. But we teach you about it and we educate you. We call our model author-driven publishing. And what we mean by that is you're actually in the driver's seat. And in order for you to make the best informed decisions for your particular situation, we have to educate you. We're not going to try to tell you that you must do it this way. There are a lot of companies out there, because, you know, there's a whole host of different options in the publishing world. There are a lot of companies who will try to sell you something. They will try to tell you you have to do it just this way and force you to use their model. Yes, we have a model and a process, but it's very broad and it's an educational one so that you can make the right choices for your own circumstances once you're educated. We call it author driven. And when you do that, when you optimize your own platform and your own particular network and ability to promote your book and craft your own product the way you envision it, that's when you're going to really be successful and get that number one rated hot new release. And again, we've seen authors do that who had zero experience.
So, well, can you give me an example from your list there? Someone who came to you completely new to the process and was able to go to a hot new release.
So when I first started this company, we didn't have the voting model, and I had a friend from college who had done a lot of original research behind the Iron Curtain in Serbia on a war criminal who's a decorated hero in Hungary, Admiral Horthy. And he wrote a book called Genocide Revealed, which when the United Nations unveiled its archives 2.5 years later, somewhat coincidentally, it validated that we had this work of seminal, original World War II history that had never been written before. So we did all that without the voting model, but we still didn't quite have the platform thing down. So that's when we decided to launch the voting model and garner the audience prior to publishing the book. And so we did a contest in which the winner would get a publishing contract from us. And a lady from Trinidad, who had written a science fiction book for young adults, and by young adults I mean adolescents, not really young adults, adolescents, sort of the Harry Potter crowd. She, because of this contest, she interested some folks in media in Trinidad, and she got on television and basically blew up our voting site.
Oh, are you serious? Because, wow.
Yeah, because suddenly votes are flooding in over the internet from Trinidad, and so she won. And she actually only took second place in the contest because somebody in India did something similar.
Huh.
But ultimately, we didn't end up publishing the book for the person in India because of the economics of the situation, and he decided that our model wasn't for him after all, because of the print costs and whatnot and distribution, and his audience was all in India. But so Rohini Singh did publish with us, and so we worked her through the same process and some of the homework assignments. We didn't have all of them crafted then at the beginning. But she had also a number one rated hot new release. We flew her out to New York and did a book launch with another author whose book was out before she published her book. So very successful. She had no experience. That was her first book. It was her kind of her life's work. It started when she was a younger girl. It took her probably, 10, 15 years to write it. She was inspired by Harry Potter and turned out to be a great success for her.
Oh, that's great.
And for us, we're proud because she's the first female science fiction writer from Trinidad, and we published her.
That's kind of cool. Where did you learn about your media tactics? Because clearly your coaching techniques in helping these authors build their platform and whatnot are very effective. You know, I mean, if we look at the authors you're publishing, it's working really well. So where did you learn those techniques and develop that?
Well, I mentioned, I don't know if this was on tape or not, when you and I were chatting earlier, that formerly I was a Christian minister. So a lot of teaching and training and working with people, oftentimes people who are struggling and striving to do something that they're not necessarily good at, in their Christian life, whether it be, in the area of marriage, counseling, or whatever. So I had a lot of experience in personal training and education one-on-one, and knowing the power of education if you can just get the right information in the right way in the right people's hands. So that, I think that's a part of, building the system with the individual in mind and making sure that person is the heart and core of it. So looking at that author as our customer and really wanting that author to succeed, not just the book, but that author. And that if they're going to be an author, that we want on our roster, we want them to be very successful. So that attitude was behind it. After I left the Christian ministry, I went into the corporate world and I did software training in corporations. And then later I worked for Deloitte Consulting and Strategy and Operations. So I figured out how some of the biggest companies are organized and how the work flows through their business. And I got an MBA. So I studied, the entire world of business and how it works. So I looked at the publishing industry, like I said, from end to end with the individual author in mind. And then I went and did an internet startup with some young co-founders out in California called GoHuman.com. And this was right when MySpace was still prevalent and Facebook was just beginning to take off. And we had this sort of mashup of what later became Yelp and Groupon and Angie's List. We had this thing sort of all in one around services. And that's when I really learned, the power of social media and how to use those tools. We're really powerful on Twitter, for example. We do great on Facebook, and we do, you know, pretty good on LinkedIn. Those are three of the main platforms that we use to source the audience for our customers as they go through our process.
Yeah, Kerry mentioned LinkedIn as well, and I was surprised when he mentioned it, and then you've mentioned it again. This is the first time I've ever heard of writers using LinkedIn as a platform to build audience.
Yeah, so I mean, each of those companies has a particular DNA around how they grew up and how they view the individual, and even how you as a user are able to access the audience. So with Twitter, there's a certain technique as to how you reach tons of individuals quickly. With Facebook, it's very different, and with LinkedIn, it's different again. But each one has their pros and cons. And again, Rohini, the author of The Time Manipulator's Son, she didn't use LinkedIn very much at all. Carrie used it extensively. It really varies from author to author as to where they feel more comfortable and where they might already have a social following. We source a lot of our actual authors and service providers that are in our mix from LinkedIn, because that's where a lot of professionals are trying to get business. So whether it's proofreaders, editors, or whatnot, and so the growth and success of our platform depends on people streaming in from all of these platforms. Most of our voter activity comes from Twitter, but we actually can pull email lists from LinkedIn if you're very careful around how you use them and don't violate spam laws.
If I remember this correctly, you have a list of service providers for, you know, content editing, proofreading, and cover art, things like that. Do you vet that list at all, or is it just a list that's kind of people submit and they put their name on it?
We've had two versions of it. The first time we did have a vetted list of people that we knew and that we worked with, and that was up in our site. We've since deployed a more self-service approach where you can list your books or list your services in a marketplace. This is kind of like what I was doing back with the Go Human effort back in 2007. But that's co-branded. It's a separate, slightly different technology than our main voting site, but they're very much integrated, and it's all self-service now. So it's the whole rating idea. We don't try to police it in any way or recommend specific individuals, but it will be based on user ratings, just like, you know, any other site where you get, you know, people providing their input on whether it was a good or bad experience.
Right.
We do have, of course, a stable of people that we know personally that once we get into a publishing contract with somebody, we'll go to people we know.
Right.
We may find them on the site and test them out, but we use people where we know the quality of their work and the appropriateness for the particular project that we're working on. Now, I mean, what you're getting at, though, is an interesting sidelight to our model. I'm a music fan, and I like to quote Led Zeppelin on this one. With Stairway to Heaven, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. What I mean by that in our model is you might want a publishing contract, and then you might decide to self-publish later, or you might think you're going to self-publish, and you might decide you want a publishing contract. Within our model, you can do either or at any time, right up until, you know, whether you want to sign a contract with us. You can also jump off and use our platform to go showcase to some other publishing company that you know what you're doing. So you can take the education and experience you got from us, and you can go somewhere else. We're not trying to corner the market. We're trying to be a player and be very open in just providing value for anyone who participates with us.
That was actually kind of my next line of questioning. So let's say people sign a contract with you, because it seems like most of the education, like from what my conversation with you and with Kerry, it seems like some of the biggest appeal of Soups is this education in building platform and marketing, and all of that comes kind of free and upfront before any contracts are signed. If they go with your model and they get the votes and you like the quality of their writing, what is your side of the contract? What is the weight that you're going to be pulling on your side that makes it appealing? Because Kerry, he was very savvy with his social media and whatnot, and even still, as he had done some self-publishing, he decided it was better to go with you to give you whatever percentage you're taking because of the lifting you were doing on your side. So what is it you do on your side once the contract is signed?
Yeah, so I got to provide a little bit of background there first to help everything make sense. We're looking to monetize the company in a number of ways so that not all of our revenue has to come from the royalties on an author's book. With all the voting to our site and all the traffic, there's ad revenue generated there. Through our marketplace of services, we use referral links, so we're actually getting referral income when people buy our books or any books on Amazon. We're also providing marketing services so that there's money coming in that way. And then there's a couple of other ways in which money is coming in, including it's not necessarily always free. We have a premium track, which provides added benefits for those who do have a little money, want to go faster, want to get white glove service from us. We have a free track so that anyone can use it, even from countries where, you know, people are really, you know, maybe challenged and can't even afford a small monthly fee. Or we have a premium track. So all of those are sources of revenue so that we're not dependent on immediately closing a ton of contracts with everybody that comes by. When we do end up offering a publishing contract, we already know that that person will have a successful book. So I think Cary saw the quality of our work. He saw that we were very collaborative, and he knew that his book would be much more successful, even with all the education that he got, if he worked with his team. And then we have a 50-50 marketing model, right? The black hole in publishing, which many authors don't realize, is marketing expenses. Generally speaking, for every dollar you spend on marketing, you will not get that dollar back. You will not make your money back on whatever you spend on marketing. Authors typically are, you know, very upset that the companies don't spend more money advertising and promoting their books. But that's a money-losing proposition. You might be lucky, actually, if you get $1 back for every $2 you spend. So the more money you spend marketing the book, the more money you lose. Authors typically love that because their book is still selling and their you know, brand as an author is increasing using somebody else's money. So because we know that that's the case, because we know that we could have a budget of $10,000 and spend it, and we would only earn $5,000 back on book sales, it's a 50-50 proposition. Authors and the company each put in 50% of the marketing budget to promote the book. So it really depends on having that hot market in advance and then deciding how much money do you want to lose in the hopes of getting that lottery ticket and having the book break through. And then it's word of mouth marketing, and then it's other reviewers and people picking up on the book and promoting it without you having to spend any marketing dollars. We look to the same approach with the royalty sharing, where it's a partnership and it's more of a 50-50 arrangement. So that's sort of the middle mark is a 50-50 sharing on the royalty. That's flexible, and we don't reveal the specifics of any individual contract because, you know, each one is unique and each one is different. But generally speaking, authors can expect that, you know, they might have to give up about 50% of the royalties in order to get all the services from us. But those services include all the full service that you would expect from a major publishing house, you know, the proofreading, the editing, the book design, the cover design. All of that is funded by Soup, and our 50% royalty is to get that money back. And if we just break even on every book we publish, we're actually okay with that because of these other revenue sources and because we're investing in building a company.
Right.
And we believe that once we build a bigger, you know, catalog of books, we can make it up in volume. If we're just breaking even on every book that we publish, eventually we'll start getting a few bestsellers that help fund even a few losers.
You know, once somebody signs on, it sounds like, you know, you're taking care of the artwork and the editor, and then the marketing, you're just splitting 50-50?
In terms of the costs, yeah. We have a team, and there are some things that we do as part of the pre-publication process, and the 50-50 marketing budget takes into effect once the book is published.
Okay.
So we do require a deposit for marketing funds, mark, if the author isn't willing to market his or her own book, why should we?
Right. So with Carrie, I was really interested to discover that the Kindle version does not come out with the print version. I think he mentioned Friday is when the print comes out, but the Kindle is still a work in progress, and he said probably not until sometime next year, which really surprised me. Is there a reason behind that?
In my experience, I like to set up the stage to compete in ways that I can win. There are so many people out there doing Kindle giveaways, and because you can give away the Kindle book for free, the competition is really, really stiff. It's actually much stiffer with Kindles. So we differentiate ourselves by focusing on the printed version. Now, you might imagine the old school publishing world, they would always come out with a hardcover first.
Right.
And then they would come out with paperback. It's actually a little bit like that.
Okay.
We come out with the paperback first, and then we come out with the Kindle version later. And that also allows us to focus all of our efforts on one book. The other, and this is, now I'm giving away, you know, part of our secret sauce, but one reason we're able to get a number one hot rated release is because if you put out two versions simultaneously, you're competing against yourself.
I didn't think of that. Interesting. So they don't count as the same sales. I guess I don't have a book on Amazon, so I have no idea how their model works there.
Yeah, each title is individual. Each ISBN is individual. So when Carrie was number three in wealth management, he was actually the second most popular book. Numbers one and two were the print and Kindle version of another book.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And so that book was obviously very successful. It probably had a, you know, I can't remember which one it was in particular, but either, you know, a household name or big marketing budget or some other breakthrough. So they had the strength to have both the print and the Kindle version be number one and two, and that's cool. But we couldn't, you know, there's no way we can guarantee it, and there's no guarantee here that if you publish with us, you'll have a number one rated hot new release. But I think five of the last six books we've published were, so the odds are in your favor.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we like to stack the odds in our favor and in the favor of our authors, because we do screenshots, and you can never take that away. You always have a number one rated hot new release on Amazon.
So how long is this process usually for the authors you work through? What's kind of the average? They come to Soups, they put up the idea, they start their homework projects to sign the contract and publish date. So how long is that time frame usually?
Yeah, it's really hard to say, but, you know, I would say certainly a year is a good benchmark from start to finish, including having your book published.
Really?
There are some who go faster. You know, we've got a person from England right now who's competed for an elected position there. She's got quite a platform. I mean, she blew through 2,000 votes, which is the point at which you get a publishing contract with us. She did that, I don't know, in like 6 to 8 weeks. Others have taken, you know, 8 to 10 months just to get the votes. I think Carrie was somewhere in the middle. He might have taken about 4 months to get the votes and work through the homework assignment. And then, you know, we went through the whole publishing contract negotiation, and then we went through the editing of his book and the creation of his book. And I'd say it's been about a year from the time he posted his book idea.
So that does feel much more like the traditional model in that time frame.
Well, we you know, first of all, we produce a very high quality product, right? So this isn't some, you know, hey, we'll take your manuscript and push a button and convert it to Kindle.
Right.
It's not like that at all. I mean, you've got multiple editing sessions, you know, content and copy editing and proofreading. And, you know, depending on the state of your manuscript, you've got, you know, really high quality book design and cover design. And then there's the establishment of the pre-order process and all that. So, you know, even if the best of intentions to do that and to do it right, you're talking 2 to 3 months just to get the product ready. And again, we require 2,000 votes and a lot of other stuff before we don't even really want to look at your manuscript. That's probably the biggest challenge that a lot of people have with us. They're frustrated that we're not interested in their manuscript. So, you know,
well, I mean, to me, that makes sense, but
we are obviously, but only at a certain point, because if you don't have what it takes on all three P's, you know, if you can't build a platform and promote your book and work as a collaborator on a high quality product, not just write your manuscript, if you can't do all three of those, you're really not for us. We're not a good fit.
Yeah.
That's what I mentioned about cream rising to the top. So we can be selective. Carrie was commenting on a call. We have a weekly call to touch base on how the project's going. And he was commenting on the fact that he's very glad that we don't seem to be interested in mass production, but that it's rather each one is a highly tailored, polished jewel.
Right.
And our platform allows the mass production aspect, just like big publishing houses get hundreds of thousands of manuscripts in the slush pile, and they have various ways of, you know, dealing with that to select the ones that they want to publish.
Right.
Our model is more holistic. It's not just about the manuscript. And because the average author really wants to focus on that and kind of wants you to start there, it's almost a countercultural thing to say, hey, guess what? We don't start there. And it puts people off initially, some people.
So, well, I think it makes a lot of sense to me. I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but my brother was talking with a woman, and she'd just come from a big meeting with a best-selling author, and she'd written a few books, and so she went up to talk to him after, and you know, was asking him, you know, how do I become a best-selling author too? And he said, look at the title on my book. It says best-selling. He says, not best writing. And I guess he knew her, and he said, I've read your books. You write better than I do. He says, but it's all about selling, and that's a marketing component.
Wow, that's a great story.
So yeah, it is a great story, and it points out the fact that, like, you have got to find a way to market and promote your book, which I think is a really good thing about you focusing and educating authors on that up front. You know, long before you'll look at the writing, you say, if you can do this, you can be successful.
Hey, and guess what? We are looking at the writing right away. We're looking at how are you able to summarize your book into what we call a book idea. Are you able to read our frequently asked questions and adjust to our model?
Right.
Now, and if you don't want to do that, that's great. There's vanity publishing. There's, you know, you can get an agent and you can try your luck with Random House and you know, Penguin and, you know, whoever else is out there, you know, Harper and Row. You know, there are many, many dozens of great big publishing companies, and then you've got tons of other models. You know, you can do any one of those. Our particular model is unique. It's different.
Yeah.
And with just, you know, an hour of research on our site, you can figure out how we do it, and you can engage with us. And by the way, we have very good customer support, you know, very personalized to help authors figure it out and find their way with us. But then when you publish your book idea and you submit it with spelling errors in it, that tells us a lot right there. We really don't need to look at your manuscript. And if you can't condense your story into a compelling pitch that intrigues the readers of your genre, again, that says a lot about your writing ability. It, you know, and maybe when you actually wrote the book, you did a much better job, but that tells you, you know, you don't really have the ability to sell your work. And again, then our model is not for you because it's author driven, and we need you to be an equal partner. One way I describe it is we help get the partner and the publishing company on the same side of the tug of war rope. We are not on opposite sides of the table by the time it's all done. All of our alignment is in the success of you as an author and the success of your book. Mm-hmm. But we got to do it together. We cannot do it for you in our model. Now, maybe again, a big publishing house with a big budget that really just loves your manuscript, they can maybe do that, and that's great. That's a different model.
It almost sounds like, I don't know if you're familiar with Save the Cat. It's the Bible on screenwriting. And one of the things he says is write your pitch first, you know, your 2-second pitch. Write that first and then build out from there. And that kind of sounds like the way you present the model to your guys is, you know, you're having them write, you know, summaries and just short things to see if there's a strong enough hook just in the idea to kind of catch people's attention.
Yeah, exactly. And do you have that understanding? It's really about a mindset, and then the craft can be learned. Well, you know, speaking of craft, if I may, spend a couple of minutes on my own writing.
Yeah, go ahead. I think I told you we are craft focused. You know, like our last discussion piece was about action beats and tags. That's what we're all about here.
Cool. So, you know, I really, one of the reasons for establishing this publishing company was I wanted to retain my own unique voice. I didn't want to get into a situation where I was going to be told to rewrite what I was writing. I had a very, very clear vision of what I wanted to create on the written page, and I knew that it was very different. I actually styled it a little bit around Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which some of your listeners may be familiar with from the 70s. I think it had the distinction of being the most rejected book ever.
Yeah, it was. I know it was rejected a ton, but I think that's the story of almost any book that gets published ever. You know, I mean, people said no to Harry Potter.
Yeah, it was this massive, massive bestseller. And it was, to me, it was so unique. It was so unique, this book, versus anything else that I read. And I imagined I might be able to do something a little bit like that. But there was no sort of, and there is a market for it, obviously, but there's no place that you can go where they would recognize you as a nobody and allow you to do that. So I wanted a model in which everybody could find, which anyone could use their own unique voice, stay true. That's why we called it author-driven publishing. So anyway, with my own craft, I wove together very many different threads, music, philosophy, religion, in this sort of spiritual, personal quest. I have a very unique background in that as a child I was kidnapped in a domestic kidnapping.
Whoa.
Where, the FBI was out after my dad after he stopped by and told the babysitter that he was taking his kids to the mall. And the kids, you know, the mother had custody of the kids, he didn't. And by the mall, he just didn't divulge that the mall was in Sweden. So he smuggled us out of the country. And
oh, wow.
Once he got there, the courts awarded him custody. And then it became an international legal battle that eventually went to the Supreme Court of Sweden. And I'm sure the laws were since changed to not allow that kind of thing again. I don't know. But anyway, that was just sort of a starting point of my own personal experiences where I was, you know, ripped away from my mom and taken to a different country, lived with aunts and uncles, you know, in this kind of traumatic situation. That led to this lifelong quest, and I really wanted to tell this story in a unique personal voice, and take it places that were not expected. This isn't just sort of, you know, me crying about how bad I had it. It's how those experiences led me to question things and to search for answers and to find a better way. And it's a trilogy because the answers, every answer that you get leads to more questions. And how do you start with a story that's interesting because of the personal drama, and people would buy it and read it for one reason, and then try to retain that audience through a trilogy that ends up somewhere so completely radically different from where it starts out that it's almost unimaginable? You know, who's going to take that on? Who's going to take on such a grandiose project? That's why I had to establish a publishing company. And boy, all the lessons that I learned along the way, trying to figure out how to write my book and work with a publicist and all that, I really want to save everybody else from having to go through the pain of all those dead ends and wrong choices that I made in the first 18 months of trying to get my own book published.
Oh, great. So I'll throw some of the questions of craft that we usually throw at the authors. I know we interviewed you as a publisher. So if you could go back to the beginning when you were first sitting down and writing, as far as craft goes, what would some advice be you'd give to your early self when you just first started writing?
Well, you know, the good news is the writing itself, I was in a place where it just worked. We had just had our first child, and there were those sleepless nights where after you're woken up the third time, you can't go back to sleep. And I would get up in the middle of the night, and I would write. circumstances because of having just, you know, had a baby and wanting a life for my little daughter to be so different from my own, that was just the inspiration. So, you know, that part went really well. I think the thing that didn't go so well was the whole trilogy idea. So note to self, don't publish the first two books of your trilogy without having written the third volume.
Really? Like publish as you complete?
Well, what happened was the third book took me by surprise too. The writing, I mean, it really did kind of write itself. So in terms of the writing, an amazing experience. I wish I could just, you know, if I could have quit my day job and not done anything else and just write, but that probably wouldn't work for me anyway. But the point is the writing just flowed. But by the time I was writing the third book, it ended up being very different. And so suddenly I found that I had built bridges to nowhere in the first two books. And one of the main characters, you know, was really not so main character anymore and had to be de-emphasized. And then because the clarity and the intensity of the finale was so powerful, I could look back and say, wow, knowing what I know now, I can do so much better on this first two books. So I'm actually in the process of reissuing the first two books.
Oh, interesting.
So one reason why that third book is still tracking towards 5,000 votes, and there's no announcement of when it's going to be published, is I secretly have to especially reissue book number two, because two chapters that were intended for the beginning of book number three have to be tacked onto the back of book number two to make way for all the new material. And the meandering stuff in the middle of book number two has to be cut.
So I take it you're a gardener or a panster based on your feedback here.
I suppose. You know, I'm a perfectionist and it's never good enough. So and at some point you got to let it go, obviously, too. But
yeah.
Really, you know, I probably at least should not have published the second book before finishing that third one. Mm-hmm. So I've done no marketing of the second book whatsoever, because I published and immediately went on to complete the writing of the third book. And by the way, it was experiences that I had in India that gave way to some of the insights that made it into the third book. And I was in India on a lecture series with five lectures. I was the keynote speaker, inaugurated by the governor of Tamil Nadu, and who named me an eminent American writer. There's another thing you cannot take it to the bank, but you can also not take it away from me. So while there, ostensibly promoting the second book, much of which takes place in India, I had these insights that led to the third book taking some detours that made me realize, wow, maybe I shouldn't have published that second book.
But at the same time, if you hadn't published the second one, would you have been in India to get those insights?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a wormhole.
Yeah, it's kind of like a wormhole. So what would you say, as far as craft goes, what is the strongest aspect of your writing craft, and how did you go about developing that? We were just talking to Carrie, and he feels that it's his dialogue, and the reason is that the way he just works through problems and thinks through things in his own life is he kind of creates a dialogue and a conversation in his head, and that's just how he thinks through problems, and so just naturally it's kind of really developed his skill with dialogue. So what would you say is your real strength, and what have you done to kind of develop that?
I think what intrigues people about my work from what I've heard from the readers is that my intent was similar to the publishing company, not to tell you what the answers are, but to get you to reflect on your own experience and come up with the answers that work for you. And so I think I do that quite well. I tell these fascinating stories, you know, that where you have the character, you know, continuing to do some smart but also some stupid things and surprising the reader, but in ways that the reader can relate and reflect on their own experience. So the reader, you know, I can't tell you the number of times I've met with some of my readers who have told me some bizarre incident in their own life that was triggered by something that was a throwaway little vignette in my writing. And the way that I do that is I leave people hanging, constantly. I don't tell them what the answer is. My goal was to not provide a page on which they could say, oh, that's a good place to stop. So people have told me they stayed up all night reading my book. And to do that, it's the rewriting. It's that perfectionism. It's going over and rewriting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, rewriting is huge in any writing process. Do you want to talk about where to find your work and where to find Soups and whatnot, and just give us some website direction there?
Yeah, Soup is SOOP, Something or Other Publishing, and you can find it at soupllc.com. All our books are on Amazon. We try to, again, it's about getting that number one rated hot new release, so we send everybody to Amazon. Even though the books are available anywhere, Barnes and Nobles, internationally, we have global distribution and print on demand on 6 continents. So that part of distribution and all that is all handled really well. But we try to focus all the sales on Amazon because it's the equivalent of the New York Times bestseller list in terms of marketing.
Right.
So if you can talk, I mean, if it's good, that's where we try to focus all sales on that. My own work. Wade France, and I'm the only one in the known Google universe, so it doesn't sound like an unusual name, but I can't hide. Everything I've ever done will be pulled up quickly on the first couple of pages of Google because there's no other Wade France out there, FRANSSON. So between soupllc.com and Wade France, you can pretty much find it all.
And I guess with your own work, is there like a well-known author or a book that you would kind of compare your work to give us kind of a feel for genre and style?
Well, like I said, Robert Pirsig with Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is one. There were also, you know, I actually kind of like James Michener, who goes back into, you know, the creation of the universe to tell a story about, you know, some people who lived in the 20th century. And, you know, I don't know if you've read any of his books, but he starts really slow and painstakingly, you know, tells all the details going through time. Between those two books, or those two authors, rather, my book kind of falls somewhere in there. Really, it's really not like anything James Michener wrote at all. I'm just saying the style of the comprehensive, exhaustive style of the writing.
Uh-huh. And then what is a book you wish you had written? Like one that you just read and just thought it was fantastic and wish you had been the author?
Well, there's this little book I read as a teenager called The Forgotten Door. It's this little story about an alien boy who somehow falls through a portal and ends up on Earth. He ends up with his farm family, and he's got these special powers. And, you know, because of his use of the special powers, people begin to realize that he's not from there, and he sparks the interest, and then he does some unique things, and he's really just trying to find his way home. And suddenly, you know, it's kind of a little bit like E.T. You know, probably whoever wrote the screenplay for E.T. got the idea from The Forgotten Door. And, you know, it's a great book for that sort of, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old coming of age. Yeah, that's definitely a great little book I wish I would have read. You know, one of the other inspirations for my own work is Richard Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning.
Right.
I love those really deep works of philosophy that try to get at the underlying nature of reality. Here's a man who wrote a book about how the Holocaust made sense when, you know, for anybody in it or anybody who's looked at it, they cannot in any way believe that it makes sense. And in fact, it, you know, for many people, they would look at the Holocaust and say there's absolutely no God. There's no meaning in the universe. There's no coherence. But Richard Frankl's book does make sense of it.
Yeah, it's a great book. I read it years ago, and I remember I really enjoyed it.
Well, I just want to thank you very much for the opportunity, and I hope that your listeners will check out our model and see if it's for them. And if not, thanks for, you know, doing these interviews and on such a fabulous topic about the craft of writing. And I'm really honored to be a participant.
So So, oh no, thank you for your time, man. This is great. And like I said, I came across your model and I was fascinated from the beginning because traditional publishing really is at a loss. You know, I mean, they still dominate print, and print is still doing very well, particularly outside of the United States. But when it comes to Amazon, you know, for a lot of the time, they're just getting their butt kicked and they just don't know what to do. You know, I mean, the advances and for authors have just dwindled into almost nothing. And, you know, they're taking bigger chunks of the royalties on the back end to the point that they're almost pushing most authors into self-publishing if you're going to be a debut. And even a lot of middle of the road authors are leaving traditional publishing because they don't feel that they're pulling enough weight for the percentages that they're taking. And so, yeah, I was really interested in your model because I think in the next 5 to 10 years, things are going to, you know, continue to change, and you know, they're going to figure out how to manage this, but it's going to be very different than it's done now. And Soups might, you know, be one of the ones that comes out on top once all of this finishes shuffling.
Well, you raise a couple of really interesting points, and if I may just take one more minute. Another part of this whole model and what happened is when I started trying to get into groups online, LinkedIn or wherever, you know, there was so much toxicity out there by other writers, this us versus them and the evil publishing companies, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute here, you know, because I look at things holistically. It is a bloodbath out there for all participants because of the disruption of technology and changing. You know, old models are broken and don't work anymore. And, you know, lots of people get disenfranchised along the way. But for people to take it personally, and yeah, I'm sure there are lots of stories of people who got taken advantage of and so on. But you know what? Ultimately, if you get taken advantage of, you know, there's usually some responsibility that you brought to the table as to why you went for that particular lottery ticket and why you thought that white knight was going to save you, why you got into a relationship, a contractual situation that was not to your advantage.
Yeah.
But there's no reflection and insight on what should each participant do. So what I tried to do was look at the situation holistically and say, here's the lay of the land, here's the situation, here's the battle to be fought. How do I partner with the authors to maximize the possibility that we'll all benefit?
So yeah, well, and I definitely see that in particularly in your marketing model. I mean, you mentioned you'd be like, you go to the author and say, how much are you going to put in? We'll match it, you know, so we're kind of in this 50-50 to, you know, to work on this project. So I thought that was, yeah, really interesting.
And then we jointly authorize what we do and don't do, and we place our bets together. Now there's no recrimination and, hey, you said you would, why didn't you? I thought you would, you were going to, it's your fault. It, you know, there's this African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah, it's a good one. So yeah, so I'll be interested to see, I guess, how long has Soups been around?
So I founded the company in 2012. We published our first book in January 2012. I think I incorporated in January, and shortly thereafter published the first book. We'd already been in discussions. So around 4 years, the voting model came about a year later with our fourth book. The first three books were published outside the voting model.
Really?
And in 2017, we're you know, really kicking off a lot of our high octane marketing activities because we feel like we've really kind of figured that out now.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see how this all works out for you guys. I'll definitely kind of keep track of a few things and whatnot. But it is very interesting, you know. I mean, knowing that Carrie's book is print only, pre-release, and it still hit a hot new bestseller. I mean, that is an impressive resume item alone, you know. And you've got several that are doing that way. So I mean, your model is really working, and it's definitely impressive. So, and even if people aren't you know, signing contracts with you, I definitely think they should go check out your site and learn from the techniques that you're teaching these writers, because they work. You know, you've got the proof.
Well, thank you for that vote of confidence.
Yeah. So I mean, I know after this discussion, I'm going to be doing a lot more research on your website as well, trying to figure this stuff out. So
awesome.
Yeah, thank you for your time. Sorry I went just a little bit over what you scheduled me for. But this was
well,
great.
That's quite all right. All right, thank you, and I'll be following your program as well.
All right, that was our interview with Wade Franson about his publishing company and his trilogy that he's working on. As always, check out our website, startwriting.space. On the blog, there's the novel edits along with the show notes from the discussion pieces. And as always, we are looking for authors to interview us. And if you can write us a review on whatever platform you listen to, that would be great. And if you've read a book, review it on Amazon or Audible or Goodreads, wherever it is, and just help support those authors. If you enjoyed it or if you didn't, you know, I mean, you know, it's the reviews are great either way. I know for me, I always like to read, you know, one from each of the star ratings to kind of get a feel of the spectrum of the book before I'll pick up something out of the blue. Anyway, thanks for listening.